I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. The cornerstone of the U.S. healthcare system is the employer. And the cornerstone idea of the system is that healthcare coverage comes with the job, because it's still the case that most Americans get that coverage at the workplace. But this principle is being shaken. As healthcare costs go up, more and more companies are having trouble putting together affordable plans. Some companies, and Walmart is the one most often mentioned, offer healthcare options that are so bare bones that a majority of workers choose not to or can't sign up. And so an increasing number of working people are finding themselves without insurance. They don't qualify for Medicaid, but they go to the hospital anyway, and taxpayers end up paying the bill. So let's simplify the question for today's program. Should employers be expected or required to pay for their workers' health care coverage? Does that responsibility change if costs continue to rise? And assuming that the costs do continue to go up, is it up to business to come up with creative new ideas so they can maintain coverage for all their employees? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we're starting the program today with Paula Hollinger. She's a state senator in Maryland, where the legislature recently passed a bill that would have required Walmart either to spend more on employee health benefits or give money to the state to help fund its Medicaid program. And Paula's joining us on the line. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. It's nice to be with you this morning.
I gather you call this the Fair Share Health Care Fund Act. Is that right?
You have it.
And the legislature passed it, and the governor vetoed it.
The governor vetoed it, and the governor also vetoed the minimum wage bill. So the situation that we're left with in Maryland, and quite frankly, we hear from other states across the country, and now, as mentioned, there's a bill going in the United States Senate dealing with the same issue. What's happening with Walmart is, it's obviously one of the largest employers in the state. The wages are extremely low, and I think the issue that passed this bill is the fact that, to the best of our knowledge, Walmart has hired people to qualify their low-paid employees for state Medicaid, and state Medicaid budgets are breaking the backs of every state. So while they are a very lucrative business, they are expecting all the other taxpayers in the state to pick up the health care costs for their low-paid employees.
I should point out to our listener, Senator, that we asked Walmart to join us on the program, and they declined to do that. I did go to their website and saw that under Maryland, they list their company as having 16,385 employees in the state of Maryland alone, with an average wage of $9.60. This bill that you're talking about, saying, look, do a better job of taking care of your employees or we're going to punish you for that, is it all about Walmart, or would it take
No.
in other companies that in the same situation?
It's probably right now, most of the other very large companies like Walmart, any of them that would qualify for that larger number of employees, have given health insurance to their employees. But you can see with a large company where the average salary, did you say $8 an hour?
$9.60 is the average salary for all their associates.
So you can imagine that there are a number of employees, thousands of employees, who fit at the low end to bring that average up to nine something. And those are the employees that are qualifying for Medicaid.
Now, did Walmart say anything to you, Senator, about this? Did they say, right, we're going to have to do a little better job of offering health care to our employees?
No, I never encountered Walmart during the whole debate.
And do you think this is going to make a difference? Do you think that using the power of legislation to force companies to offer better health care to their employees is the way we're going to go, either at the state level or nationally?
Well, I think if you look at the history of health care or attempts at health care reform in this country, you'll see that while we think of ourselves as the employer being the cornerstone for health insurance, other than Medicaid and Medicare, then we can see ourselves going into destruction, because for many of employees, even where it's offered, their share of the premiums and their co-pays have gone up so high, where the rest of their family isn't covered. So the roles of the uninsured are growing, and health care costs are literally out of control now. So unless there is some agreement someday on how we're going to fund a universal system so that everybody has access, and I know I've sponsored bills along with some of my colleagues, that bills that have passed this year that basically bring back a lot of our old health care system before Medicaid and Medicare, and that is our community health center system and our school-based health center system. So at least primary care will be opened up to uninsured people in our community.
All right, Senator, we're going to move on here. I want to thank you for helping start us off on the program today.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Senator Paula Hollinger is Democratic state senator in Maryland, joining us on the phone from there. We're going next to Kate Sullivan-Hare. She's joining us from a studio in Washington, D.C. Kate is the executive director of healthcare policy at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. It is a business federation representing some 3 million businesses. Kate, thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
Tell me what you think of these legislative pushes that are either directly or indirectly targeting Walmart. Can legislation be used to force companies to change policy in this way?
Well, legislation certainly is the big stick. You want to put the encouragement out there. And there is some disagreement about whether or not states can force this on employers, since the benefits law is really covered under federal law. So that's why you do have the action that the Democratic senators took yesterday. But this really comes on the heels of lawmakers 10 years ago, or about 8 years ago, expanding Medicaid benefits quite broadly so that it could reach more children in working families and making them entitled to these benefits. They've created a big government expansion, entitling many people to benefits that were essentially free in some cases or very low cost.
But does that mean businesses then can go, hey, we can back away from this because the state level and the governments are going to do it for us?
Well, actually, no. I mean, it did not mean that. And there was a provision in there saying that to be eligible for those benefits, you had to be uninsured for a period of time. So people had to be uninsured for a minimum of 6 months, sometimes a year. What happened was you had many people at work who were either paying anywhere between $50 or $100 a month. Typically, that's how much one pays to sign up for benefits, when they could get it for free through the state Medicaid program. People are eligible based just on their income, and lawmakers act very surprised that people are actually signing up for those benefits when they're eligible to get it for free, when they actually have to pay something at work. And it is unfortunate that healthcare costs have risen so dramatically in the United States. But while employers continue to absorb a great portion of the increases, we all see more and more of that money coming out of our own paychecks and when we go to the doctor. So it's really no surprise that people who are eligible for those benefits in their states are signing up when they otherwise have to pay for them at work.
Now, I mean, whenever we open the newspaper these days, we're reading stories about companies like General Motors and others tearing their hair out, saying that we can't produce cars and be competitive and pay for health care at the same time. Are we watching a trend here that is seeing large and small corporations move away from a responsibility or an obligation to provide health care? What do you think, Kate?
I think they're certainly struggling with this burden. We are now into the 3 or 4 generations of Americans who have relied on their employers for their health benefits. And that just simply isn't sustainable. We don't work the same way we did in the 40s. We don't stay with one company all of our lives. And we get a great more from our health benefits. It's quite possible to be someone earning $30,000 a year with a $10,000 health plan. That's quite a benefit. What we need to find are ways for people to get coverage outside of getting a job. Unfortunately, we see a lot of people taking a second job because of the benefit.
Right.
And we need to create ways for people to access affordable benefits, even if they have an existing medical condition, and get the subsidy that they need, and to be able to pick the plan that works for them, not what their employer has picked for them, but something that works for them. And very importantly, to keep that health plan job, when they change jobs, when they go back to school in their 30s to get some additional education, to retire early, that they don't.
Let me, if I can, just stop you there. I want to bring Karen Davis in. She's listening along from a studio in Manhattan, and Karen's president of the Commonwealth Fund, a foundation that supports research on health and social issues. And Karen, welcome to the program.
Delighted to be here.
Quick question, because we're coming up to a break here, and we will carry this conversation on beyond the break. But you and I are listening to Kate say that, in fact, maybe we are watching a fundamental shift in this country where employers are no longer going to be able to bear responsibility for health care. Is that the way that you see it as well?
Well, I think employers need to share in the responsibility. It is the main way that people get coverage. About 160 million Americans have coverage through their employers, and most of them are pretty satisfied with it and think their employer does a good job. So the real problem is that we have 45 million people who are uninsured, and 80% of those are in families where someone is working, but they're unfortunate enough to work for an employer that doesn't provide coverage. So the real issue, I think, is how we can encourage employers to share the responsibility evenly across different kinds of firms.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, who's paying for your health care? Is the company plan looking a little bit more expensive and a little less affordable each time it is revised? How important is it that employers continue to bear responsibility for that? And what is it that governments, politicians can do to make that happen and make that continue? 1-800-423-TALK to join us. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. We're watching politicians right across the country try to figure out what they're going to do to encourage employers to continue providing health care insurance. They're now going to the extent of, in fact, drafting legislation to try and lasso companies the size of Walmart to say, you need to do a better job of providing more affordable health care for people. Is that the way that this is going to have to work? Are the corporations going to be pushed by the politicians to do this? Is it in their interest to try and maintain that coverage? Kate Sullivan-Hare is with us. She's Executive Director of Healthcare Policy at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And Karen Davis, who's President of the Commonwealth Fund, a private foundation supporting research on health and social issues, is also with us as well. And Karen, there's one more point that I want to try and get on the table here, because in your organization's writing, you make the point that it's always been to the benefit of the country and the worker and the employer that health care comes from the company, that it comes from the workplace. Why is that so important in your view?
Well, certainly health care is very important if we're going to have a healthy, productive workforce. Employers have found that offering health benefits allows them to recruit and to retain excellent, skilled workers. It improves employee morale. It improves employee productivity. So a worker who's healthy, whose kids are healthy, is more likely to be on the job and able to concentrate and really contribute.
But why does it matter if it's a company plan as opposed to a state plan, a national plan?
Well, there are a lot of advantages of employer coverage. It tends to be very efficient, so it has lower administrative costs than, say, people going out on their own and buying insurance in the individual market. You get a natural pooling, so you don't just have sick people signing up for insurance, which is what insurance companies worry about when people apply in the individual market. And employers have benefit managers who really get to know the companies and can help the employees if they run into difficulties with the plan. So there are a lot of advantages of group insurance, and it's what most workers want. Even low-wage workers who don't have coverage want what high-wage workers mm-hmm. have and would like to have health benefits on the job.
Kate, what about the points that Karen's taking us through here?
She's absolutely right. I mean, this has been an outstanding recruitment tool. In fact, it's in place today. I mean, we see companies that are in a period of rapid expansion, and the company under discussion today, Walmart, as it was expanding throughout the country, taking these very low prices everywhere, it seems, used this as a recruitment tool. They knew this was something that people would come, not so much for the hourly wage, but for the benefit. And the benefit manager aspect is important. Helping someone to navigate the health system and be their advocate has really helped. Of course, that doesn't happen in small businesses, and I know someone will talk about that later in the program. But there is a problem that Karen has mentioned about the natural pooling. This historically has been exactly what's made the employer health system work, that people were there for a reason other than the health insurance. They were there for the job. And that is no longer the case. We really can't access health coverage outside of employment very easily or very efficiently today, particularly if you have a pre-existing condition or a child who needs an organ transplant, for example. And what you have is people, when they do offer benefits and you can work outside of the 9-to-5 schedule, take someone in the family could take an off-hours job for the benefits. Or you have people who are staying at their jobs. They're not taking a job at a startup, or they're staying long past the point of early retirement.
I want to ask you about that. I'm wondering about the people who hang on to the job at ABC Corporation simply because they like the benefits there. Is that something that, you know, writ large is seen as a problem for the American workforce?
It is a growing problem. It's not so much they like the benefits so much as they can't get anything else. And they wind up consuming as much in health care as they might be taking home in a paycheck. And it is a growing problem, and that's why you see some companies advocating for some sort of way for the government to come and help with their highest costs above a certain level to encourage ease for disease management so that employers can more readily manage chronic diseases. And we're getting a lot more information about ways to do that, both for Medicare and for the private sector.
These are the ideas about reinsurance, where the government would step in and pay for some particularly high-cost treatment so the employer didn't have to worry about that.
And that's something that could happen to help guarantee coverage in the individual and small business market as well.
Let's go to our callers and see what their contributions are to this. We're at 1-800-423-8255, starting in Boston, and Elaine is with us. Thanks for calling, Elaine.
Hi, my name is Elaine Alford, and I'm a public health professor and a primary care physician in Boston. Excuse me. I have one caution and one general comment. The caution is when we look at average wages, be very careful. If you have 100 people who are earning wages, and an average is the when you add them all up and then divide by 100, you get that number. I'm very concerned in companies like Walmart, where they may be a small number of people earning extraordinarily high wages, the executives, for example,
right,
and then most of the people earning very low wages. So when a company reports an average, I'm not so sure that that really reflects what the general wage earner is earning.
Okay, what was the other point that you wanted to make here, Elaine?
The other point is that I think that we all have to realize that the employer health care contribution has grown up with the system over the past 40 or 50 years, and that it's not a black and white issue, trying to figure out whether we should keep it or throw it out. It's much more complicated than that, and I think we need to really rethink how we provide health benefits and health care as a society. And it's not just employers, but it should be taxpayer dollars, maybe a single-payer health care. And I think it's a fascinating conversation.
Do you think we're past the time when the employers can be expected to make that contribution and stay competitive, Elaine? Is that part of what you're saying?
I do, actually. I agree with that. I think it's we're seeing businesses going overseas. And I think that we're having a two-class society with the very well-off and the very poor. And I think that things are going to get worse in a country with 45 million uninsured. We really need to face this issue.
It becomes, Karen Davis, a really interesting sort of dilemma, because in many ways what we're looking at is a coming together of the far left and the far right, the people who've always been calling for a kind of universal health care, and now people who used to advocate that as being part of the private sector saying, you know, if we're going to maintain a private sector, we have to get those costs out of there. Maybe government could come in. And I mean, are we now on an inevitable track to some kind of single-payer universal health care?
Well, I think we're going to continue to have employer coverage, and that we need to continue to have employer coverage. But Elaine makes a number of good points, that employer coverage works differently for workers at different wage levels. A company like Walmart, for example, has a 6-month waiting period for full-time employees and a 2-year waiting period for part-time employees. The premium may be less affordable for low-wage employees. So certainly looking at a share responsibility with government perhaps providing some assistance to low-wage workers to help them pick up their share of the premium I think you're right that there are many people who like to get away from the employer system and have single payer. There are other people who like to get away from the employer system and just let people buy individual coverage. But I think we just have to keep reminding ourselves this is the mainstay of health insurance in America. 160 million people have employer coverage. Employers are spending $400 billion a year on that coverage. And it's not very easy to walk away from that. We already have 45 million uninsured. Without employer coverage, we'd have a lot more people uninsured.
But Kate Sullivan-Hare, if I understand what you're saying, although there are so many people who depend on employer-sponsored plans, you're talking about a shift, a pretty fundamental shift away from that, from your perspective.
Well, I don't know any employer that wants to throw their system out next fiscal year. they may have days that they really feel that way, but they, as Karen said, I mean, it's they want their employees to have a regular source of health coverage that they can afford so that they can show up at work every day.
Can I just interrupt
plans,
you on that for a half a second here, Kate, because I need to try and understand one point of this. If it becomes this kind of shared mix where, you know, government covers the top end or government and private enterprise works together in offering what some sort of system, and it ends up looking kind of similar right across the workforce, what's the incentive for employers to stay in the business of offering health care? If it doesn't become an incentive to come work for me because my plan work looks just the same as the guy across the river, why would business even want to remain in this? Because it's a cost for them too.
It certainly is a cost, and you want to. And one of the key things, certainly, if there's any kind of transition one way or another, and some say we are in this transition already, they want to know that their employees, in fact, are signing up and accessing the coverage on a good basis. There are other ways to entice people to jobs, starting with salaries. I mean, really, it's all about the paycheck in the end. And unfortunately, employers have been pouring money into benefits and not investing into their businesses. And there's other ways, I think, to recruit and retain individuals. Fundamentally, employers just want to know that they are healthy. But and we've certainly seen employers maintain that commitment to coverage. When you ask particularly small businesses, why do you offer this coverage in the first place, they say it's because their employees need it. There's nowhere else for them to get it, and someone in the business, sometimes even the business owner himself, needs that coverage, and the only way to get it is through the group. And I think everyone agrees. I mean, the Chamber of Commerce, we would like to see everyone in this country have health insurance. We don't necessarily think everyone should have exactly the same plan run by the government. We have such a system right now. It's called Medicare. And we are just not able to finance this many years from now. And I think before we throw everyone into this program, we want to know that it is certainly sustainable. And what are the other ways in which people can access and plan for coverage throughout their lifetimes?
We keep coming back to the dilemma that small business owners are having offering health care to their employees. Let's go to Golden, Colorado for a call with Ann Brown. Ann is a co-owner of New Vista Enterprises. It's a small digital printing business there. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
You've got about 10 employees, is that right?
That's right. We just started our business about a year ago.
And are you offering health care to the people who work for you?
We certainly are.
And how do you manage that?
Well, we knew it was as essential as our liability insurance, as buying equipment. We just consider it a necessary benefit. I don't think we could attract employees without it.
And the kind of plan that you have access to, Anne, are you limited because of the size of the company, because you're going to a healthcare provider and saying, well, look, we've only got a dozen people here. What can you offer us?
Actually, in Colorado, we had a multiple of options. We actually used a healthcare broker, and she brought four or five options to us. Now, not all of them were very palatable, but a couple of them were competitive, and we went to a health reimbursement plan, and that was something new at the time.
You have to explain how that works for me, Ann.
Well, it's a high deductible plan where we can offer the employees $1,500 deductible, but they have a $1,500 in a reimbursement account where if they use preventative services,
right,
the reimbursement account handles that for them. And if they don't use all of the $1,500 in 1 year, it carries over to the following year. So there's an incentive for them to use it wisely.
I'm wondering, Anne, you said at the beginning that it's almost essential when you're hiring someone that you offer them some kind of health care. If you look ahead 5 years, 10 years from now, do you think that it is important that employers remain an important part of providing health care, or is this a real big pain for you?
Well, I happen to think we can probably manage it more cost-effectively than some other entity, because we're going to make sure that we have programs for our employees to stay healthy, to understand the cost, and I'm concerned that another entity would not be able to do that same thing.
Just stick with me if you can, Anne. I want to go back to Kate Sullivan-Hare on that, because, Kate, it's been one of the principles of people who argue against government-sponsored universal health care, that it's been the private sector that says we can do it more efficiently and we can keep costs down. But if you're talking about a shift to greater involvement, are you giving up on that principle as a representative of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce?
Not at all. We do think that we just need to make this system work a lot more easily and smartly for employers like Ms. Brown. And I'm glad to hear that in Colorado, because that's been one of the places we get calls most frequently to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, wondering if we offer a health plan to members because they've had such problems with costs and offerings out there. The advent of these health reimbursement arrangements and savings plans has brought new competition to small businesses for their business, and that's been really terrific. And what we need is just a way for business owners to be able to make that initial simple decision, find a place where they can buy the plan, buy it one time, and then continue growing their business and doing what they do best, not managing those benefits.
And Anne Brown, if I can just come back to you, would you agree that it's always going to be the ingenuity of the private sector trying to figure out what's best for employees and what's best for the company that's going to provide both affordable but also a decent level of health care on into the future?
Well, I'd like to think we do a great job of that because we have the most personal rapport with our employees and their families. But I'd like to see help outside of that with medical centers within the community and hospitals, programs that they do to help us. Obviously, our insurers, we need a lot of help from them to have plans. But I think when it comes down to getting the attention of the employee, that we have the best chance of that.
Anne, I want to thank you for being with us on the program. It's nice to hear that perspective.
Thank you.
Anne Brown is co-owner of New Vista Enterprises. It's a small business based in Golden, Colorado. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Who's paying for your health care? Who should be paying for your health care? And where are we going to be 10 years from now? Louisville, Kentucky next, and Bill's on the line. Hello, Bill.
Hello.
What do you think?
Well, I believe we need to be looking more at the universal coverage, holding the government responsibility for their health, safety, and welfare of their citizens instead of burdening the businesses. That's gone. Those days are gone. We need to get back in the business of doing business and not burning up so much of our time and finding these answers.
Do you have any sort of direct experience with this, Bill? Are you a businessman yourself?
Yes.
And when you say that we've sort of gone past the stage where business can manage this now, would you be in favor of some dramatic shift to, one plan, everybody under the same roof, all run out of Washington?
When you throw it out there and just say run out of Washington, that scares people too, to say, well, the government is such a bureaucratic mess, they can't run it any better.
I did that on purpose, but I just wanted to know what your reaction was.
The other part that's eating us up is the health business and the insurance business themselves. The health industry is sucking off about all the public money they can. They build new facilities and stock it with beautiful, expensive sculptures and things to try to make it look like to bring in the higher paying insured people. But, more and more Walmart's an easy target, but they're doing like everyone else is. The bottom line is we cannot continue to raise our labor, our prices, et cetera, on the fast pace that the medical industry seems to be able to do, and with the help of the insurance business, too.
I appreciate your point, Bill. 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, we'd like to have you in on this program. We're talking really about what the responsibility is for business to continue to be the cornerstone of the U.S. healthcare system. Can it last? Should it be a mix? Or are we talking about some kind of substantial shift? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection this hour, a conversation about who should be bearing the responsibility and the costs for health care. Our number is 1-800-423-TALK. To Nashville, Tennessee, Anne is joining us. Hello, Anne.
Hello.
Tell me what your perspective is.
Well, it's, I would think, a combination of both. Combination of more responsibility on the part of the employers, but certainly on the part of the government, and portability would help, I think.
See, my recollection of Tennessee is that at one point the governor said, you know, we can expand our state health care plan. TennCare, is that what it was called?
TennCare, that was under Ned McWhirter. He created this brilliant, and it was working great, and now they are disassembling it, or the uninsurables. The Medicaid patients will still be covered, but the uninsurables, like myself, will be dropped in just a matter of weeks. My uninsurable pre-existing condition was use of antidepressants, and I have many friends who are in the same boat.
Are you working, Anne?
Pardon? I'm self-employed.
Yeah, so does that mean that, you know, because you've got some income, you can find any kind of a plan that's going to cover you and cover, you know, and taking into account your pre-existing condition?
No. I've been rejected by Blue Cross, Continental General, Fortis, everyone, because of my use of antidepressants. And the thing that really gripes me is that Blue Cross got the administrative contract for TennCare.
So what's your fix, Anne?
I'm going to be in a real bind because my antidepressants will run somewhere between $425 and $500 in a few weeks. And obviously, someone with ALS or diabetes or a serious life-threatening illness needs to be retained. But it's my understanding that some of those people will even be dropped because their incomes do not qualify them for Medicaid.
Let me, if I can, just turn to Karen Davis on this, because Karen, the plans like TennCare, as Anne said, you know, seemed like a perfect answer at the time when they were put into place for those people who weren't insurable. But are they just getting priced out of the system? Are they becoming so expensive that even the states can't afford to maintain them?
Well, healthcare costs affect everyone, the federal government, the state government, and employers. But I think there are things that the federal government can do to particularly help make health coverage affordable for lower-income people. The state children's health insurance programs have worked very well, and they can be a base on which to build. I think most people say if you have incomes below, say, $20,000, $30,000, you ought to be covered through those kinds of programs. But states can't do it without more financing and help from the federal government. For people with serious health problems, like Anne is mentioning, one option is to open up Medicare to let the disabled and early retirees and the chronically ill purchase coverage through Medicare. Currently, you have to wait 2 years as a disabled person to get coverage under Medicare, and one strategy would be simply to eliminate that 2-year waiting period.
But who would decide, though, Karen? Who would decide who qualifies to come under the umbrella of these plans? Say you've got a family of four, you've got a mother and father, they're both working, they might be low-paying jobs. I mean, I can imagine a situation where some government bureaucrat is going to say, well, you've got two jobs, you've got two cars, you just don't qualify, you know, based on that alone. I don't know how you ever set up a system that judges fairly who deserves that kind of assistance.
Well, I think everybody ought to be covered through one system or another, but I think we can target solutions on different population groups. I basically see four strategies for getting everyone covered. Employer-based coverage is a good base on which to build, maybe covering young adults under their parents' policy up to age 23 or 25. Right now, they're just covered if they're full-time college students.
Right.
Covering low-income people under these state children's health insurance programs is another piece of the strategy. Medicare, covering the disabled and older adults. Currently, you get Social Security disability payments, so we've already determined who's disabled, but you have to wait 2 years to get Medicare, so we could eliminate that. And then the final strategy is really offering a solution for small businesses that would give them access to the kinds of premiums that large businesses have. And there's some very good models at the state government level. Maine, for example, has set up a Dirigo health plan that lets small business cover their workers, that lets self-employed buy coverage like Ann. And the employer picks up 60% of the premium, and the rest of the premium is split between the employee and the state government on a sliding scale.
Karen, let me go, if I can, to Kate Sullivan here. As you listen to Kate going through this checklist, is this all stuff that, as far as you're concerned, from a corporate perspective, could work to maintain employer-based health care?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, all the different approaches that Karen was listing seem to be in this model of let's expand entitlement to some public funded programs and continue to protect that base. And then people act surprised when working families choose those publicly funded entitlement programs over the employer-based coverage that's offered to them at work. And you can't have it both ways. You can't go and expand government programs and then act surprised when people sign up for them.
But it's just a balancing act, isn't it? I mean,
anybody facing that
choice is saying, look, here's my premium at work. And here's,
sure,
here's the
absolutely. If you can get it for free, why pay something for it? I mean, I think we all feel that way. And that's why we need to go, instead of just expand the state programs, why not use some of that state money so that someone who has workplace coverage can use that state money that they're entitled to by virtue of their income and pay their workplace premium instead, even if that coverage is less generous or requires some cost sharing. Chances are it probably offers access to a better, more comprehensive network of doctors. And this has been a struggle. It's certainly what the governors and state legislators are seeking. But some of the advocates are saying, no, that's you can't ask people to pay so much or even anything for their benefits. I do want to also talk about the caller from Tennessee. To me, it is really astounding that the 10-CARE program, which is really meant to be a safety net, is also where someone who has a clearly manageable condition like depression is considered uninsurable. Employers manage, though employer plans deal with employees like her all the time in very cost-effective ways. But they have set up an insurance system in Tennessee where it's very easy for insurers to turn her down. Even someone who buys over-the-counter antihistamines in the spring could be turned down, or someone who has sought treatment for low back pain is considered uninsurable, just the same as if they'd had Parkinson's. And that's wrong. We need to put some backstops into those insurance programs for the self-employed, for individuals in states like Tennessee, and then require those insurance companies to take them at a fair price.
And can the Chamber of Commerce lend its considerable weight to those people who are self-employed like Anne who are facing that?
Absolutely. This is what we are seeking, is a way for individuals, for the self-employed, for small business owners who then have an employee who has a catastrophic health condition, something that's truly unexpected, premature twins, for example, that is not going to be an ongoing expense year after year, where they can have some predictability in their insurance premium and an easy place to go.
I'll get Anne to call you then.
I would love to talk to her.
I want to go back to our callers. I want to go to Panama City, Florida next. Matt's been waiting on the line there. Hello, Matt.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. What do you think?
Yeah, I work 70 hours a week, every week, and my insurance with my company is completely unaffordable. I couldn't afford it if I wanted to. The housing here is $1,000 a month. Everything's expensive. The thing I'm concerned about is the United States sends billions and billions of dollars overseas to aid other companies or other countries.
Yeah.
Why can't they aid us?
Let me ask you something though. If you get sick or if you hurt yourself in some way right now, you're not having health insurance. You go to the hospital in Panama City, and what do they say when you walk into the emergency room there, Matt?
They ask for my insurance card. I don't have one.
And then what?
They charge it to my credit.
And they're not going to see you unless they've got an imprint of your credit card, right?
We have a local hospital here that will see you. It's a state hospital. They will take you in the emergency room, but only until the point to where you're not critical anymore.
I mean, this is coming up in states right around the country, I think, Matt, where governors are saying that taxpayers are ending up supporting people who go to those kinds of hospitals rather than use the money in that way. What would you have the government do here? How would you like to see the system change? Do you want the government to give enough sort of tax support or assistance to your employer so the health care plan is better? Do you want to leave the employer right out of it and just, you know, take a plan that's available to all people in Florida? How would you, what would work best for you?
Well, you hear about large companies using government subsidies to help them manage their over expenditures when they have a problem. Why can't the government give companies subsidies to help with insurance costs?
Karen, what do you think about that?
Well, I think Matt makes a good point, and certainly I think Kate and I would agree that letting states use their dollars to make premiums affordable for lower-wage workers is a great idea. Otherwise, you have a situation like Matt's in where you wind up in an emergency room, which is very costly. You don't have your conditions, whether that's hypertension or diabetes, controlled well, and you get into a crisis situation. So
you got no doctor's appointments, no preventative medicine, nothing,
right,
you know, through a health care plan, which is supposed to avoid people having to go to the emergency room in the first place. I mean, that ends up being perhaps the most expensive kind of system, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's very wasteful. And we need to make care accessible to people, have primary care centers. But many people just won't go if they don't have insurance. And so quality of care deteriorates, and we don't deal with the problems that we really should deal with. People don't have medications. They really can't. Even if they see a doctor, they can't afford to fill the prescription if those drugs are running $300, $500 a month.
Let me go to Boston for our next call. Gina's joining us from there. Hi, Gina.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. What do you think?
Well, what I think is I run a small nonprofit agency in the Boston area, and I guess what I'm finding is that employers around us are not offering as good a benefit as we are, I think based on a value decision that we feel that because of the wages of the workers we're able to pay, which is, you know, $30,000 to $40,000 jobs typically, we really want people to not have to use most of their paycheck to pay for their insurance. So we offer a high employee contribution to both individual and family plans. What's happening is that our employees who might be able to get insurance through a partner's plan at, say, a large university, are not going to get as good of a deal. So they're staying on our plan with our, you know, $1 million budget, and, you know, as opposed to their, you know, endowed $50 billion or whatever.
But tell me something, though, from the perspective of a nonprofit, if you are able to provide a plan that satisfies you and your employees, when you hear private sector people saying, we can't do this and remain competitive, are you suspicious about that?
I am, just because I think, you know, nonprofit is only a tax status. It has nothing to do with the fact that we don't have to end up in the black at the end of the year. We do. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to, you know, take a hit of an insurance increase or start a new program that's needed in our community. We need to come out well at the end of the year, too. But we balance that with what we currently need to do well by the people who do a very difficult job for the community mm-hmm. every day.
And Kate Sullivan-Hare, contained in what Gina is saying, is the same kind of criticism that people are aiming at Walmart. I'm not going to ask you to speak on behalf of Walmart here, but the broader criticism is that business is just complaining because healthcare is nibbling away at profits, and it's part of what business needs to try and cope with as a way of you know, helping out the employees.
But healthcare is not just nibbling away at business and profits. I mean, it is chomping jobs. General Motors, the nation's largest employer, announced that they're going to be scaling back their workforce tremendously. They already support a number of every worker supports about four retirees or their dependent. And it's just not something that you can continue to do. It's one thing if it nibbles and you decide to go and make that decision to hold off on another investment. But what is happening is corporations really are not replacing their jobs, that when people leave, when they retire, they're closing plants. They are not investing in their small business. They are not expanding. Mm-hmm. And that really hurts the economy as a whole. And it seems like everything is going up and around us except our paychecks.
Karen Davis,
the cost of everything.
What we're seeing and hearing about is reports of sort of backdoor meetings between senior executives and high-level politicians. Is it your judgment that at some point we are going to see business and government and taxpayers come together on some kind of system that controls the cost or at least provides basic medical care to the 45, coming on 50 million people without any insurance?
Well, I think the business community is coming around to the view that we've got to do something about this problem, whether it's high costs because you've got an older workforce with a lot of retirees, which is General Motors' problem,
right.
Or what Jenny's really alluding to here is that when an employer doesn't cover their workers, other employers wind up picking up the tab for that. So our studies show that about 16 million people get covered under a spouse's employer, and that costs the employer that covers them $31 billion. So when not all employers don't do their fair share, they don't share in the responsibility for financing coverage, those employers that do wind up paying twice for their own workers and for the dependents as well.
Can you legislate at least that much to try and make it a little more of a level playing field, Karen?
Well, I certainly think that all employers are going to have to share in this responsibility and contribute something. That doesn't mean they have to provide the health insurance. They may simply contribute to a fund or a pool where their employees can get coverage. But if we're not all working together to solve this problem, business doing its share, workers doing their share, federal and state government doing their share, we're just going to continue to have an increase in the number of Americans who can't get health care when they need it. We've got 45 million uninsured today. That's going to rise to 50 or 60 million over the next decade. And we really can't afford to continue to have a situation where people can't get the health care they need. They're going without their medications. Many of them facing bills that they can't pay or going bankrupt even because of medical bills. So we need a solution to this. And I think the business community really needs to be in a leadership position calling for change.
All right. Karen, I thank you for being with us on the program today.
Thank you.
Karen Davis is president of the Commonwealth Fund. And Kate Sullivan-Hare, thanks for your time as well.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to join you.
Kate is executive director of healthcare policy at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We talked also on the program with Ann Brown, who runs a small business in Golden, Colorado, and Paula Hollinger, who's a state senator from Maryland. The Connection is produced by Katie Bacon, Sarah Baker, Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenollosa, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Help this week from Chris Engels, Addie Goss, and Maura Kelly. Our senior producers, Tara Murphy. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.